This is HeartWise, offering practical tips and time-proven guidelines to make your life healthier, happier, and more fulfilling. Today you'll learn simple Bible-based principles for building and maintaining optimum mental and physical health, all while deepening your relationship with your Creator. I'm your HeartWise host, Charles Mills. Here's a passage from the back cover of our guest's new book. Today, it's rare, she says, to find children rolling down grassy hills or climbing trees just for fun. We've taken away merry-go-rounds and teeter-totters to keep them safe. And as children's lives become more virtual via TV, smartphones, and computer screens, teachers are noticing a decrease in attention, and doctors are reporting an alarming increase in sensory and emotional disorders, end quote. Wow. What are we doing to our kids? Angela Hanscom has written a very revealing book on that topic, and she's here to talk with us today. Angela is a pediatric occupational therapist and founder of something called Timber Nook. We'll learn more about that shortly. Angela, welcome to HeartWise.
Thanks for having me.
The very first chapter of your book, Balanced and Barefoot, is entitled, Why Can't My Child Sit Still? Okay, Angela, tell us, why?
Well, basically, my theory is that children are pretty much in an upright position for most of the day these days, meaning they're sitting for many hours. In the past, a lot of children would walk to school. Maybe they had a snowball fight on the way, or they climbed a tree, and so they're moving in different directions. Yeah. And then they might have had an hour-long recess session where they got plenty of time to move. Then they went home, and a lot of kids in elementary school didn't have much homework. They maybe had a worksheet, and then they were off playing outdoors until lights went off. One day, I was doing a presentation in front of an audience of 200 people, and so I felt like, oh, this is a great chance to ask, do a little survey. And I had asked the adults, now tell me, how many hours did you play outdoors on a typical school day? So not even on the weekend, but during the week. And keeping in mind what I just talked about, walking to school, maybe having an hour-long recess session, and then playing when they got home, most of them said they had an average 4 to 5 hours a day that they got to play outside. Yeah. When I asked how much time your children were playing outside, they said the average was 45 minutes to an hour and a half.
Oh.
And now the research is actually saying 48 minutes is how much time kids are playing outdoors. And so that's a really significant decline of play. You know, 4 to 5 hours of moving your body and resistive work and digging and engaging your muscles is a lot more than 45 minutes. And so anytime you change the environment that drastically, you're going to see a change in child development.
You make the case here throughout the book that movement and coming face-to-face with challenges and having to be creative has a lot to do with health of the mind and of the body. Make that connection for us. Why are teachers noticing a decrease in attention and doctors seeing disorders in sensory and emotional health?
Yeah, a lot of it does come down to movement. Talk about where kids were upright a lot.
Right.
So think about they're sitting for hours, and then they go home and say they have a pile of homework to do now, because that's more standard. A lot of kids might have at least an hour, even in elementary school, to have to sit and do more homework after sitting all day. And then they might have activities where they have a chess club, or they have some kind of organized club of sorts, where they're still kind of sitting. Even soccer practice, you're still upright. You're not going upside down. You're not spinning. You're chasing after a ball.
Yes.
So because you're in this upright position a lot, you're not going upside down and spinning and moving in all different directions. And so inside your inner ear, there's little hair cells, and we need to move in different directions rapidly in order for the fluid to move back and forth. And that actually develops your balance system. It's called your vestibular system. And that sense is a sense that a lot of people don't really understand. You know, a lot of teachers don't have that neuroscience background.
Right.
And so that sense is actually one of the most important senses in our body. And it's called the unifying sense. And it really helps to organize all the other senses. So if that system is not working right, which, in fact, many children today, that is one of the number one things that has to be treated if they get referred to an occupational therapist because they have troubles with attention or balance or coordination, their vestibular system isn't quite working right. And so that can affect everything. It can affect your emotional regulation, your ability to control your anger and your emotions, not cry at the drop of a hat. It can affect your vision. It can affect your attention. It feeds right into the brain to turn the brain on to be able to pay attention. So it can really affect learning if you don't have that organization of the senses.
You know, moms and dads are going to say, okay, Angela, that makes sense. I hear the science behind that. But have you been outside recently? Have you seen the creeps that are out there? Have you seen the dangers that are lurking everywhere? How in the world am I supposed to send my precious son or daughter out into that world to have that kind of activity and that kind of spinning and running around and jumping up and down and going upside down to develop that when the world is such a bad place?
There's always a way around that, kind of targeting what is your fear. If it's bugs, if it's, like ticks are really a big issue here in New England.
Right.
A lot of times you just need to check and educate yourself on that insect. I used to be afraid, to be honest, of the woods. I would have nightmares, ironically, of the woods before I started all of this work. And I really had to get over the fear of a tick and not let one bug get in the way of my children, their childhood. And so it's really just checking at night to make sure that, you know, there's no ticks, that kind of thing. Fear of strangers, you can go out with your children and just, you don't have to, you can just sit nearby so you're within earshot. My kids bike to other kids' homes and they bring walkie-talkies. I've heard of some neighborhoods where they reestablish relationships with their neighbors so that all the neighbors watch out for the children, which, you know, we're in a busy culture. A lot of times we don't take the time to do that anymore. So it's really just making an effort to bring back some of that type of play that we're missing.
You have touched on something here that is going to be a sore point for a lot of busy moms and dads, and that is involvement. I don't know where we get the idea. Someplace in the last couple generations, we got the idea that, you know, if we have to be involved with the children, well, we don't want to do that. You're saying be involved, educate yourself. I guess you're saying that being a parent is a full-time job. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yes, it does take work.
Yes, it
That's
does.
That's funny.
Well, okay, so we as parents need to start being involved because we're parents, and that's part of the job description. How do we do that? How do we find time in our busy lives to make sure that our children spin around, jump up and down, get upside down, and have a good time without dropping a couple economic levels in our lives? I'm being the devil's advocate here. Without sacrificing our lives for our children. We don't want to do that.
That does take some sacrifice. I mean, you know, there's a reason why we have children. But I think there's a lot of changes in our society and environment that need to happen. But it can start simply with your own home and kind of slowing down a little bit. I feel like we're all trying to keep up with the Joneses, and we feel like our children have to be doing everything. Like they have to be in band, and they have to be in extra art class and then Boy Scouts. And it gets really busy, and it's very stressful for parents. I feel like that's more work sometimes than just letting go and saying, no, we're going to keep it really simple at home and allowing that time. See, that time is missing. Children just don't have time to play anymore. And I feel like we're doing a big disservice to our children by not allowing them to just simply have time to relax and play. And that is very healing. So Timbernook is this program that's spreading throughout the United States and in New Zealand. And the whole philosophy is stepping back and allowing kids to play. And so we're not front and center. We have this whole concept that we have to play with our children, and it's really not. It is important to play with your children, but it's also important to allow them to play on their own, because they're forgetting how to do that because they're so used to being directed by adults. So, and that's hard for adults to do, to step back and not to interfere or give them our ideas, but to encourage them to start thinking on their own again.
Very good. We're talking with Angela Hanscom. She is the author of a book, Balanced and Barefoot, and she is running a program called Timbernook, and we're going to talk about that on our return. When we come back, Angela, you have a chapter in here, What's Wrong with the Playgrounds and Indoor Play Spaces of Today? We want to learn more about that. We also want to learn how we can take our yards, our basements, our houses, whatever room we have, and turn them into a place that is healing to our young people as opposed to creating disorders that we talk about and attention problems in school. And we can do that on our return, so stay right where you are.
I'm Dr. James Markham with your biblical prescription for life. A patient came up to me the other day and said, "I've been feeling down lately. What can I do?" Well, our biblical prescription for life is found in Genesis 1, verse 14. And God said, "Let there be light in the dome of the sky to separate day from night." Well, God knew what He was doing when He made light. I call that phototherapy. We know that light helps with the activation of vitamin D, which in turn makes an important chemical called serotonin. Serotonin helps improve our moods, helps us fight depression, makes us feel better. So I want to encourage you today, make sure you go outside every day. Experience light, the light God created. Have these chemical changes in your body. Go out 15 to 20 minutes a day, and I guarantee you, your moods will improve. For more information, our website's heartwiseministries.org.
Did you know that last year in the United States, over 4 billion prescriptions were written? Prescription medications seem to be the most popular treatments these days. But what can we do if we want to limit our exposure to prescription medications? At Heartwise, we recognize the importance of nutrition in treating and prevention of disease. Dr. Hippocrates stated, "Let food be thy medicine." Many evidence-based studies support a whole food, plant-based diet. But how is this achieved in the fast-paced world we live in today? We want to encourage those interested in this type of treatment to watch the documentary film Plant Pure Nation and visit the website plantpurenation.com. This is a great first step towards helping yourself move towards better health and helping make the world a better place. Visit plantpurenation.com to start your journey today. That's plantpurenation.com.
Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills. Our guest today is Angela Hanscom. She has written the book Balanced and Barefoot. And now we know what the word balanced means. She brings this out in the book, of course, that we need to teach our children not only to have a balanced playtime, but also their actual balance, their ability to be balanced. Their inner ear is involved in what she's talking about, and that is free play, time to just be a kid like we did when we were young. You mentioned at the beginning of the program that this study has shown that kids only have like 40-some minutes out there, and we had hours of time, and I remember that very well. Okay, let's talk about the playgrounds that we have today. We look at these playgrounds, they're like Disneyland waiting for us to come in. What is wrong? This is chapter 6 of your book. What's wrong with the playgrounds and indoor play spaces of today, Angela?
Specifically for playgrounds, we've really changed a lot of the equipment. In the early 80s, there was a big lawsuit that happened. A child got hurt because of the way the structure was built, not because the structures were offering risk. And so because of that, they started establishing more playground rules and how high structures can be off the ground and really changing the equipment. So when some of the equipment got rusty, the old merry-grounds or the old metal equipment, they replaced that with plastic, simpler versions, brightly colored play structures. So bright red, bright yellow, blue. And these colors are very stimulating to children. Sometimes it brings their activity level up. They're designed, I think, to engage the children. So that's an interesting concept because really children, they just need the challenge. They don't need to be engaged with colors. So a lot of the equipment of the past were actually they were pretty therapeutic. They offered a lot of great sensory input. We use swings a lot as occupational therapists to treat children with attention and balance issues. And so we'll purposely get them to go upside down. We'll get them to swing high, to stand on swings, to spin, and do all those things help them to develop really good spatial awareness to safely navigate their environments. when we decreased the length of slides and swings, we really, it's just physics, we decreased the amount of sensory input they're getting. We took away merry-grounds, and merry-grounds are actually very therapeutic. We, in our books, in our OT books, there's an exercise we do where we spin children on a hammock swing around us. So the adult's in the middle, and then we spin the child around us. And it, what it does is it creates a centrifugal force inside the inner ear and bends the hair cells that we were talking about in one direction. And it actually helps with sustained attention and balance. So that's interesting because that's the same exact emotion that children get when they're on the merry-ground. So merry-grounds, in essence, actually help over time if they got that input on a regular basis with attention. So a lot of those equipment that really challenged children and got them in all different directions actually helped with spatial awareness and attention and allows them to be safer. And now the playgrounds, because they're so simplistic, a lot of the times kids can master them at age 5 or 6, and it's no longer a challenge. So if we really want safe children, we really need to challenge them at the next level, and we do need to have more equipment that does offer great sensory experiences.
Let's start with our homes. What can we do in our backyards or in our basements that can bring that type of sensory motivation to our children? What can we do?
So if you do have a backyard, if you do have a place outdoors, it's great if you can be outside, because, you know, nature really is the ultimate sensory experience. And when you step outside, you have more senses are involved. So you have the wind, you have the sun beating down on you. And when you have multiple senses engaged, your chances for sensory integration are going to be higher because more synapses are firing. So if you just stepping outside and listening to the bird sounds and getting all those senses is going to be therapeutic to the children. And, you know, the colors of the leaves and all that stuff are not overstimulating. And then, you know, just putting a couple of play structures out there that are separated so that kids are more likely to explore the environment. For instance, at Timbernook, we'll purposely put a rope swing in one region of the woods, but then maybe a rope structure in a totally different section of the woods so that the kids will go to different parts of the woods and start exploring. Whereas if you put all the play structures right in the same area, you're going to get playground play where kids just line up and all they do is play with the playground. So part of the whole concept is to spread things out and also to add loose parts. So stuff that they can pick up and move around if you want to inspire creative play, like baskets that have nothing in them or see-through blankets or shears, curtains, and just putting those down saying you can use anything you see will often inspire kids to get creative and start building forts and stuff.
When do I know, and you cover this in your book, when do I know when my child is ready for the outdoors? I mean, some kids will stand there looking at the great outdoors and be scared to death. How do I overcome that, and what do I do?
I feel like the best time to introduce a child to outdoors is right from the very beginning because, you know, the more exposure they get to touching the dirt or even sitting in the dirt as babies, they are starting to integrate that touch sense right away. A lot of people make the mistake of putting their children out when they're toddlers or a little bit older, and then the kids aren't used to the sense of the touch of sand or grass, and then they have an aversion to it, and so they got to work on that. So right away, right from the very beginning, it's great to bring them out. Even just like carrying them around in different directions will help with their balance sense. All of that is really important right from the very beginning. Now, if your child is not used to the outdoors, then my suggestion is to go out with them in the beginning, and doing outdoor chores is almost the best way to do that, because if you're raking or picking up sticks, you're busy, and putting out some loose parts like I talked about with sticks and some baskets and shears like that will inspire them to play, but they feel safe because you're right there as well.
Mm. We're talking with Angela Hanscom. She is the author of Balanced and Barefoot. And Angela, you've been mentioning something called Timbernook through this. What exactly is Timbernook, and how can we learn a little bit more about it?
Timbernook is a camp program for parents that really want this type of play, but they're worried about, you know, strangers. So we do have adults out there. The whole camp is designed to get kids to play independently again and to play really creatively. They play in a level that's really hard to replicate anywhere because there's about 20 kids And then it's a 1-on-5 ratio. So we have a lot of adults watching and hiding. But they'll create societies out there. They'll send messages to each other through police systems and create hierarchies and have leaders. But they play at a level, a very advanced play skills. So it's very neat. It's their chance to play like years past when kids were allowed to play in the woods and stuff. So we're really trying to replicate that and send a message that, you know, it's okay to climb trees. It's okay to build forts and to move sticks around and be barefoot.
That address for Timber Nook is www.timbernook.com, and we'll give that address one more time at the end. Okay, as we're coming to the close of the program here, Angela Hanscom, if a parent wants to start doing something right now, the program ends and they look across the room and there sits Johnny or there sits Sally or whatever their names happen to be, and they're sitting there looking at television, how do you motivate that kid to go outside, and how do you make the next hour of their lives worth something as far as their health is concerned?
Well, I think the first thing I would do is limit exposure to media, television and whatnot, to being a treat. One thing that a lot of adults do is every day they have a certain amount of TV time they're limited to, but then a lot of children feel entitled to have that every day, and so that's just taking up time as well. And then keeping things simple so you do have time to play outdoors, and really stepping out and just taking some of the suggestions I already talked about of just putting some loose parts out there and sitting out there and staying busy yourself and really allowing the children to come up with their own ideas is really key. The first time a child goes outdoors and they see sticks and rocks and leaves, in their mind it's just sticks, rocks, and leaves. But the more practice they play with those sticks, for instance, if they're sitting and all of a sudden they're digging with that stick, they're going to get more ideas. Like, oh, I didn't realize this could be a shovel. And then inviting friends over is really important. Maybe a friend comes over and starts using sticks to build a fort. That child gets another idea. Oh, I didn't realize I could build a fort with sticks. So there's two ideas. So the more practice they get playing outdoors, the more ideas they're going to get, the more creative and independent they're going to get with outdoor play. It really just takes time and the space to do so, and we have to be patient.
You know, you hit on a very important point here, and I remember from my childhood this how important this was. Kids love to be watched by adults. Hey, watch this. Watch me do this. Watch me do this. And if you just sit there in the backyard or in the woods or something, and you are just nearby and you're watching this kid play, they love that. You are not causing a problem. You are causing a real joy in their hearts. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, all right. Angela Hanscom is our guest today. The address for her Timber Nook organization is timbernook.com, TIMBERNOOK.com. And this is Angela Hanscom, HANSCOM. The book is entitled Balanced. Now we know what she talks about. Balanced and Barefoot, available wherever good books are sold, I'm assuming, Angela. All right, Angela Hanscom, thank you so much for sharing with us and telling us that we need, I would assume, in closing, I would assume that getting out there in nature and doing all this stuff is good for adults too. Would I be right?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Yeah. Okay.
We need to move and play, too.
All right. Join the kids. Go out there, move and play, and have a good time. Get the book Balanced and Barefoot by Angela Hanscom. Angela, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your words of wisdom. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Charles.
And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Angela Hanscom, inviting you to remain heartwise. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you for joining us today on HeartWise. If you'd like more information on how to build and maintain optimum physical, mental, and spiritual health, log on to heartwiseministries.org. HeartWise is a listener-supported program, and your partnership with us would be greatly appreciated. Once again, our web address is heartwiseministries.org.